south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. All right, coincidentally, just a show or two ago, I was talking about earthquakes here in Latin America. Yep, they happen all the time, and guess what? Had a massive one at about 6:30 in the morning, just this morning. The day I'm recording this show. Yep, like I said, we get them all the time, but you only really feel one about every couple of months. And sometimes, you know, you think you feel one and you're not really sure until maybe the next evening in the news or in the paper they say there was a 3.2 or a 2.8 or a 4.0. As for me, I can usually start picking one up when it's in the 3 range or so. Below that range, I'm just not that sensitive. Don't pick them up. And oftentimes when I run into someone I know, they'll say, hey, did you feel that earthquake yesterday? Guess not. Oh, sure, they happen all over Latin America, but I just happen to be about 30 or 40 miles from the epicenter of a really big one, a 6.8. And I'm recording this on Thursday, the 22nd of June. Once again, just to emphasize that the place I'm in was built first world quality all the way. The architect did everything by first world anti-seismic standards. That means the correct Portland cement to sand and rock ratio in the concrete. That's one of the all-important factors, you know, because that's one of the easiest ways for the contractor to cut corners, and you won't even know it. By far, the most expensive ingredient in concrete is the Portland cement, and contractors know they could save a lot of dough by skimping on that. Now, if you use less Portland cement, when it hardens, the concrete looks the same, feels the same, nobody knows. But it just doesn't have the long-term strength and resistance that the correct mix does. Aside from that, first world standards indicate that you put rebar, that's steel rods, at certain spaces and intervals within the concrete mix too. That means if a floor, wall, or ceiling cracks, it's not going to crumble. It'll be held together by the steel within it. So anyway, Thursday the 22nd at 6:30 in the morning, I was jolted up. Dogs barking, windows rattling. Driveway chicken eggs rolling down the street? Well, not quite. By the way, that's when you know it's at least a 5-pointer when the windows start rattling. And man, this one was a shaker. But nothing broke, nothing fell, no cracked walls. Now, big ones like that don't come around often. Could be a big one like that'll show up every 10, even 25 years. Or they could show up 2 years in a row, back to back. You never know. But when they do, they're always a bit scary because you're standing there for 30 seconds or so. And you're wondering during that time, is it going to get worse? Well, even when it's over, you don't know exactly how far you are from the epicenter, and you don't know how big the damn thing was, not until you flick on the TV. Then the reports start coming in. And when houses fall and people die, inevitably a story like that will creep into the 6 o'clock news up by where you live. And you'll see the destruction on your TV for 10 or 15 seconds. People crying in the streets, looking at the rubble that used to be their home. Now, it won't be us gringos and expats out in the street, I can tell you that. We don't build shacks and dumps in geographically unstable areas. But still, after an event like that, and the word gets out up in the first world, soon enough, the phone calls and emails start coming from the relatives up in Cleveland, Milwaukee, Tucson, and Chicago, wondering if we're still alive, are our limbs all intact, are we in the hospital? Have our houses fallen down over our heads? Yep, they're ready and willing with the I told you so's. You shouldn't have moved to that godforsaken place. Except, what you see on TV is not what's happening to us gringos and expats at all. We're all safe and sound. Oh, we felt it all right, and it gave us all a bit of an adrenaline kick. But we live in nice neighborhoods with anti-seismic construction, you know. And the destruction you're seeing on TV is in the poor, geologically unstable areas where people shouldn't have built. Almost always squatters living in slums whose homes were built without following construction codes or even having permits. Unfortunately, all over Latin America, people build on the sides of hills, ravines, and mountains. All very unstable, but the land's cheap, in fact, mostly free. Worse yet, it's been estimated that about 90% or more of all the buildings that collapse and crumble during a big earthquake are made out of adobe. Do you know what adobe is and how it's made? It's got a nice look, rustic, Old West or Old Spanish colonial style? Well, if you bother to look it up, you'll see it's just bricks made out of mud dried in the sun, not even in a kiln. And there's no internal reinforcement like metal holding the bricks together. So what you're seeing on the 6 o'clock news are failed adobe, wood, and tin laminate structures. Buildings and shacks that never should have been constructed in the first place. But you know, people have to have shelter, even the poorest of the poor, so what do? They find extremely cheap or free land and just start putting up structures. Which is also why during the rainy season, when there's a week or so of heavy rains, you guys up north might also see on a slow news day a wicked-looking landslide that's buried a few homes or even a subdivision in a godforsaken third-world country, too. That's nothing new. That happens during every single rainy season down here in Latin America. Because again, there are patches of land that are precarious. They're so inclined or are at such an acute angle that they have really no value except for scenic beauty. That is, they look really nice, often breathtaking, from some miles away while sitting on your back porch. But that's about it. And since they have really no value as viable property to build anything on, when the squatters or the poor come in and start building little shacks and the place multiplies, the property owner, which in some cases could be the government, doesn't bother to come in and kick them out. They figure, why should they go through the trouble when the land really has no commercial value? Plus, you know, if they did that, scumbag politicians would lose the poor vote, you know. Which brings us to a big concern of many expats who know they have frequent earthquakes here. Of course, they want to be safe, so they choose to live in first world projects that they know are constructed with anti-seismic techniques. But are they? Just because a contractor builds a house and says they're to first world standards, can you believe it? The question is, and I get this once in a while, especially after an earthquake like we've just had, they say things like, Johnny, I know if I build my own house, get my own architect and supervise the construction, or have someone who knows better supervise it for me, I'll get a first world project all the way and have no problem, whether it's an earthquake or whatever Mother Nature has in mind. Now, the thing is, very few gringos and expats come down to Latin America and build their house or office building, whatever, from scratch. They'll almost always rent first, which is a good thing. Get the lay of the land. And then they'll buy, generally, an existing structure. Often it's a house in a nice gated, guarded subdivision or residential tower or an existing single-family home on a few acres out in the boonies. And you know, in those upscale, gated, guarded communities, the houses do look awful nice and were built by architects, you can tell. But as I've often said on the show, the contractors will skimp all over the place whenever they can. So then suppose you found a nice existing house for sale, you want to buy it, looks first world and all that. Well, how do you know if they've skimped or not, or how much they've skimped? You don't want to find out they skimped on the cement mixer rebar during a big earthquake now, do you? All right, then, if you're house shopping, how can you tell if the house has been built to first world standards all the way? Well, here's a little tip you won't hear anywhere else, I'm sure. All you have to do is find out the size of the drainage tubes that are connected to the toilets. If they're 4 inches, no problem. Definitely the house is built to first world standards, because that's the first place plumbers and contractors are going to skimp. They're going to put 3 inches or 2 inches, because you'll never see those things. So if they don't skimp and you find you have 4-inch drain pipes or sewer pipes leading to the toilets, you can be pretty confident they went exactly by the architect's plan. If you're watching this on YouTube right now, you'll see a photo of what the floor looks like with a 4-inch drain before a toilet is installed. And you'll see what a 2-inch drain looks like too, exactly what you don't want. Now note that I'm not talking about the drain that comes down from the sink or the drain that you might have in a shower or a bathtub. That can be 3 or 2 inches, no problem, because there's only water going down there. So don't worry about that. What I'm talking about is the drainage tube that connects to the bottom of a toilet. I repeat, if the drainage tube is 4 inches in diameter, don't worry. You can count on the fact that the house is built to first world standards and anti-seismic construction. All right, then, so what if it's a 3-inch drain tube? You'll see a lot of that. I'd say half to 75% of modern new construction here in Latin America has 3-inch drain tubes. Nope, wouldn't pass first world code. And believe me, you'll have your share of snake and plunger moments. But then the question is, how about the rest of the house? How much have they skimped? Well, if you really like the house, I wouldn't give up on it just because it's got 3-inch sewer drains to the toilets. Oh, and if you really like the house and you're thinking, well, I'll just switch over to 4-inch drains, I'll get a contractor in, well, wait a minute. That would be a huge job and not worth it. So 3-inch drains, not good, but not the end of the world either. Except now you'll want to do a more detailed inspection of the place to see if they've skimped anywhere else. Next, you'll want to check the thickness of the walls. Say what? The thickness of the walls? Well, down here in Latin America, nearly all structural walls, that's outside walls, are concrete block, reinforced with rebar down the empty vertical holes, which are designed to all line up. And then they pour concrete in the holes that have the rebar. So in the end, about every other hole in the cinder block becomes a solid concrete tube. That's how it's supposed to be anyway. Now there's a place where the contractor can skimp a lot too. You'll never know if they put concrete and rebar in every other hole. After a building's done, it's almost impossible to check that. Anyway, if you found the tubing is 3-inch instead of 4, and you still like the house, next step is to get out the tape measure. Then you just go to any door on an outside wall and measure the width of the wall. It should measure slightly over 6 inches wide. Sometimes it'll be 6.5 or even 7 because they'll put a coat of plaster or concrete on the wall to make a flat surface before they paint it. But with no superficial coating like that, we're talking 6 inches. When a contractor skimps on walls, he'll use smaller 4-inch blocks. So if you see 4-inch blocks on an outside wall or supporting wall, you should scratch that house off your list. However, they'll use 4-inch width block all day long when you're talking about closets and inside rooms. That'd be perfectly fine. I'm talking about outside and supporting walls now. I mentioned in a show a while back that drywall has made a big entrance here to Latin America. Gypsum board, you know. Big mistake, wrong material for the climate, but try telling that to the contractors down here. I repeat, if you use it, you'll be sorry. Even so, it's showing up everywhere, especially in strip malls and even in the bigger high-end malls. And you'll see it in low-end, what I call matchbox construction, and in some high-rise construction projects too. Oh yeah, it looks fine when it's new and it paints up nice. But as you know well yourself, it dents and bashes easily. And what's worse here in Latin America, we've got that 6-month-long rainy season with rain like you've never seen before when it does come down. That means lots of humidity too, and believe me, the biggest enemy of drywall is water and humidity. When exposed, it sucks it right up. It's an absolute wick and starts expanding. So there goes those nice, smooth, taped joints when that drywall contracts again in that 6-month-long summer season. So there's another thing you should try to avoid at all costs. When you're building a house, do not use drywall. Now, if you're renting, chances are you'll be stuck with drywall here and there. They're starting to use it, like I said. But when out house hunting to buy, do a test. Check for drywall. How do you do that? Well, you tap on the interior walls, and if they're hollow sounding and not solid like a rock, then I'm afraid you've hit drywall. Another way to tell? Tap it hard with your knuckles, and if it really hurts, it's cement block, not drywall. Drywall gives a little, and it won't hurt your knuckles much. I know, you do-it-yourselfers and tinkerers out there will say, but man, drywall's so easy to deal with if you're running an electrical wire or cable, whatever, or just drilling holes to hang a picture. Yeah, it does have its advantages, but they're completely wiped out when you consider the problems that you're just asking for during the rainy season here in Latin America. Because you see, if you do sprout a leak in your roof or a pipe breaks, whatever, your cement block walls will get saturated a bit, but they'll dry out just fine and not lose any of their looks or their structural integrity. But drywall, it gets saturated just once and game over. You gotta rip it out and replace it with new. So again, don't let anyone talk you into drywall, not down here. But back to this kind of dirty business about checking to see if your toilet drain pipe is 4 inches, 3 inches, whatever. So if that drain pipe is in the floor, under the toilet, how are you supposed to find out the diameter of the thing? Well, you can't just run down to the basement and check out where that toilet is and see where the pipe is going and measure it. That's easy to do in the States, but down here, they don't have basements. So then how are you supposed to be able to tell without actually unbolting the toilet and pulling it off? Pretty disgusting, huh? Well, there's one easy, non-destructive, kind of revolting way to find out the diameter of your toilet drains. In other words, if you're squeamish, best have your gardener or maintenance guy do it. Anyway, maybe him or someone, maybe you or someone you don't like who owes you a favor, can go out to the backyard and lift the concrete cover off of the fossa septica. I said fossa septica. That means septic system or septic tank. Only here in Latin America, they don't have metal tanks like they do out in the boonies, sometimes in the States. Here they're constructed as kind of underground concrete tombs or bunkers. So there'll be a concrete cap or cover flush with the ground in your backyard somewhere. Pull that off and you'll see, well, you know what you'll see, but you'll also see where the pipes are coming in from the toilets. From there it's easy, just measure the largest diameter pipe. The smaller ones are what they call leach bed pipes. They leach out into the backyard as part of the way the microbes take care of the effluent, with the nearby soil as part of the absorption process. Oh, and I know what some of you are thinking. Why not call up the architect or the builder if you can locate them? You know, and ask them if they've undersized the pipes or skimped out on the rebar concrete or Portland cement mix. What do you think they're going to say? Now, at the beginning of the show, I mentioned that it was a coincidence that I had just been talking about earthquakes on the show, and well, a big 6.8er hit, and I was in it. Little scary for about 30 seconds, but life didn't skip a beat. By the way, just about a week earlier, a 6.8 big one hit on the border of Mexico and Guatemala, and since I was a couple hundred miles away from the epicenter of that one, I barely felt it. Just a tiny little bit of swaying and a rocking and rolling, nothing more. Again, don't think those big 6-point whatever and above are commonplace. That was a very odd event to have two big ones like that in the same week. Then again, the epicenters were a couple of hundred miles apart. All right, that said, how about this for coincidence? If you recall, on just the last show, I was talking about the legalities and illegalities of medical marijuana here in Latin America. And I mentioned that legislators in Mexico were working on a bill to decriminalize marijuana use and legalize medical marijuana use. Well, funny enough, the very day after I recorded that show, wouldn't you know it, Mexico has officially legalized medicinal marijuana. So, starting this week, the medical use of marijuana in Mexico is completely authorized, but not yet for recreational use. In a government press release, it says the Houses of Congress are mulling over that issue right now. Then it says, with the passage of the medical marijuana law, the Ministry of Health has exactly 180 days to establish new regulations for what does and does not constitute medical use. All right, the dominoes are falling here in Latin America on medical marijuana. We've got Uruguay and Mexico on that bandwagon, with other Latin countries mulling bills themselves. And since Mexico is always the bellwether country for Latin legislation, you can expect the other Latin American countries to come online very soon. So there's good news on that front. Oh, and if you remember, on last show, I mentioned that when you go to one of the big markets here in Latin America, they sell all kinds of crazy things. And there's a guy walking around, or more than one guy, saying, "Marihuanona, marihuanona." That'd be that marijuana / Carmex lip balm or skin balm, whatever. Well, just as another coincidence, kinda, I was in one of those big markets just yesterday, and there was a little guy walking around yelling this startling phrase, "Veneno de alicrán, veneno de alicrán," which of course means to all you top-notch and not-so-top-notch Spanish speakers, "Get your scorpion venom here, get your scorpion venom here." Yep, that's right. This little Latin guy was selling packages and tiny little tin and plastic vials, again, kind of like a tin of Carmex up in the States, of genuine scorpion venom. Hey, what's not to like about that? You've probably heard stories, read blogs, and have run across articles talking about bee venom and snake venom and scorpion venom, used to treat various conditions, neurological, arthritis, blood conditions. Now, that's not the first time I've seen scorpion venom sold here in Latin America, but it was definitely the first time I'd seen it packaged and marketed with a logo and, well, kind of professionally done. Complete with an evil-looking scorpion printed right on the package. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm not fond of scorpions. Not since I'd been stung by one a couple of years ago in a hotel room in Honduras. You longtime listeners will remember that story. By the way, when you get stung by a scorpion, the first thing that happens is, besides the pain, your tongue goes numb, just like you'd been shot up by the dentist. And it lasts just as long, too, a couple of hours. Now I wonder if I'd have bought some of that scorpion venom, would it have done the same thing? But I didn't. Though I did ask the little guy what it was supposed to be used for. What was it good for? And he said it cures toe and foot fungus. Contemplating that's enough to ruin your appetite, huh? Oh, but I did ask him, who milks the scorpions? And he laughed and said, a lot of people, and there's job openings all the time, in case I was interested. By the way, in case you wanted to know, there's an awful lot of foot and toenail fungus going around here in Latin America. Maybe it's because of the heat and humidity, or when it comes to the ladies, the constant use of uncomfortable high heels. And you might ask, except for the guy selling the venom, how would I know about foot fungus? Thankfully, I've never had it, but it's just that there's so many commercials on TV touting various kinds of foot fungus cures. The way those things show up every 10 minutes, you'd think there was an epidemic. Well, maybe there is. If that's the case, based on other commercials, there's an epidemic of hemorrhoids down here too. Which begs the question, is there a foot fungus phenomena up there by you in Seattle, Milwaukee, or Cleveland? How about scorpion venom? Would you take a flyer or would it gross you out? Just wondering out loud, you know? All right, now it's time to get on to something that irritates me quite a bit, actually. Initiated by this email from Mr. Richard H. Johnny, he says, this is an example of why you should get all your documents in order before leaving the United States. Then he says, an expat from our country is currently working and residing in Guatemala, but has hit a snag with immigration. And then he refers me to a fairly popular blog site on expats in Guatemala called expatexchange.com, where, you know, you can submit a question and people will respond to you. The problem is sometimes you'll get 10 different people with 10 different answers. So who do you believe? And in the case we're going to talk about now, there'd have been no controversy at all if that person just would have gotten a Latin lawyer early on, right in the beginning when she was contemplating getting residency. Problem is, you know, so many people try to do it themselves. Once they get down to Guatemala or Honduras, whatever, they hook up with a few scruffy gringos in an expat bar, and the next thing you know, they're telling you, you don't need a lawyer to get your residency, you can do it yourself. If you've got more time than money, just stand in the lines, you'll get it done. Sure, you can try that, but these days, there's a lot more hoops to jump through, and most people just can't do it themselves. Even if your Spanish is pretty good, these days it's almost impossible to accomplish without a lawyer. Well, I went directly to this blog, and the first question up was from a person who's bogged down in the residency process. Listen to this. The question is from a lady foreigner in Guatemala. She says, does anyone know where I can get fingerprints done for a state police record required by Guatemala for residency? Thank you so much for any help. All right, then someone immediately replied in the next post. That person says, is this for a residency application? I'm not entirely sure there's any place in Guatemala where you can get your fingerprints done. We tried for my husband, went to the police and asked if they could do it. They could not unless he was arrested. Yikes. So we never did find some place we could do it in Guatemala. Then another good Samaritan who's trying to help posts this and says, do you need a state police record? What does that mean? For which state? For Guatemala? As far as I know, you can make your fingerprint in front of a notary and he would certify they are yours, I think. Then the lady who originally posted the very first question said, yes, it's for my residency. They want me to get my state background check. I have to get my fingerprints done and a fingerprint card they sent me and send it back to them for my record. Is there anyone that can help me with this? Then the next guy says, if they want just your fingerprints, just put it on a card and send them back. I'm sure they will match your file if they have one. Do they have to be made with a notary? Then the lady with the supposed fingerprint problem says, it says online that it has to be done by police or government, and so they have to sign the card. This is such a hassle, and I'm working, and I cannot get back to the States. Then comes another post that's supposed to be a helpful suggestion. It says, have you ever been fingerprinted? If so, maybe you can get a copy. Just a thought. I'm going to get a copy of mine from the military. Then the lady with the original question writes back, no, I haven't been fingerprinted. Thank you for the advice, though. Then another helpful person blogs in. He says, if what you need is a U.S. background check, take a look at this link. Then he gives a big, long FBI records management / fingerprints link. Then another guy throws in his two cents. He says, would this be for an FBI background check? It would take way too long, plus it's overkill. When I did my residency a year ago, I wasn't required to submit any fingerprints. I only had to get a criminal history report from the county where I last resided in North Carolina. A friend of mine got it from the courthouse and paid $25 and certified it. What state is requiring your fingerprints? Then the original lady writes back, immigration here said it was fine 1 year ago and my application has been pending this whole time. Now they say they want a state record proving no arrest. I called Illinois and they said I could send them fingerprints on a card. They'd authorize it and then I could take it back to immigration. I think I only have 30 days and then my application is no longer good. Okay, then we have, what is this, the 10th suggestion? This guy says, are you doing this by yourself or with the help of an attorney or notary? Did you initially include a police record? If so, where was it from? As far as I know, there's no one in Guatemala who'll do your fingerprints and certify them. And on and on. Yep, there's so many clueless, penny-pinching gringos out there. Obviously, this person screwed up a long, long time ago by not sitting down with a lawyer. So, 10 people chimed in and only one guy got it right. He said, as far as I know, you don't need fingerprints. You just need a police report. And that's totally correct. And your lawyer would have told you that from the very start. And if you've been listening to this program, you know, Guatemala is one of the last remaining countries where you don't need fingerprints. You just need a local police or sheriff's report. That is, to apply for a permanent or temporary residency. So why are we talking about all this? Well, to prove there are lots of clueless gringos down here. I don't know if they're just squeaky, tight, penny-pinching ex-backpackers or school teachers or what. But man, you could save yourself loads of grief by just hooking up with a lawyer right away, ask his advice, make friends with him, and have him do all your legal stuff, including residency, banking, an SA corporation if you need one, and use him when you buy a house or sign a rental contract, or when you need utility hookups or an internet contract too. Believe me, if you try to do all this stuff on your own and you just go on blogs and ask other gringos, unless you're really lucky or happen to be married to a Latino or a Latina who can help grease the skids through the legal process, you're in for a world of hurt, stress, and disappointment. Because, you know, in those gringo bars and hangouts, every gringo, whether he's been down here 4 days or 4 years, has an opinion and a story or two, and he's more than glad to give you an earful. And I think you can begin to see by those bits and pieces of that blog I just related to you that many gringos don't know what the hell they're talking about. And if you don't get on the right track and get the right information from the start, you'll be chasing your tail and jumping through hoops for who knows how long. All right, that said, getting close to the end of the sign-up period for my July 2017 Expat Insider Seminar. Just go to www.thenewexpat.com, click on Johnny's seminar link for all info and info about those famous John Galt pre- and post-seminar trips. And if you can't swing the trip or get boots on the ground now, do take my Expat Essentials course. Just go to www.expatplanb.com and get the 3 free introductory videos. And finally, for those of you who want to do a one-on-one phone or Skype consult with me to discuss your own Plan B, download my questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com.
South of the border.
This is the Expat Files, living in Latin America. If you want me to help you out with your own Plan B, just schedule a one-on-one consult. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to learn how to move forward with your own Plan B from right up there in the States, go to www.expatplanb.com and check out my 3 videos. See ya. Nos vemos.